And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to continue our season preview today. We're going to focus on the Denver Broncos, and this is another team, Paul, in which the Giants are going to have to go to the West Coast, one of four road trips this season.
Indeed it is. Mile High, always a very difficult place to play, whether it was the old stadium or the new stadium. You're talking about the number one defense in the NFL last year, allowed the fewest points per game. Giants were number two, number one in the NFC, but that's also a team that's got a bit of a quarterback issue. The Giants will see them in week number six.
Well, who better to answer some of those questions that you just threw out than Arnie Stapleton, who covers the Broncos for the Associated Press, and he's kind enough to join us right now as we continue to preview the Giants' upcoming 2017 opponents. Arnie, Lance Meadow, Paul DeTino here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Thanks, good. Thanks for having me.
Well, our pleasure to speak with you. And let's start with what Paul just mentioned, Arnie, about the quarterback situation. Trevor Siemian got reps last season, as did Paxton Lynch towards the end of the year. How do you see this quarterback competition playing out as they start up training camp?
Well, it's been interesting because for all the jockeying back and forth, you know, the real competition doesn't begin for another month. And once they're in camp, you know, Vance Joseph has said it's going to be a fair fight. And I would think if it's a fair fight, Trevor Siemian wins the job, unless Paxton in this month off has an epiphany and all of a sudden learns to throw over the middle of the field and doesn't always rely on the spectacular. If he can start doing the mundane things well, he's got a chance to win the job. That's if it's a fair fight. It might not be a fair fight. We don't know. It might be that they want to push Paxton, the former first-round pick, over the seventh-round pick. And so Trevor's going to have to win the job with kind of a TKO. I think Paxton could win the job just on points. But if I were a betting man right now, I think Trevor is going to be the starter to start the season. But it's a 50-50 competition. They've made it. They've given Paxton every chance in the world to catch up and win this job.
Well, you know, Arnie, every quarterback really knows that his best friend is a running game, and we know what C.J. Anderson is. We know what Jamaal Charles was. I don't know if we know what he is, but do you have any handle on what Jamaal Charles is going to do to help the Broncos' running attack?
Well, I don't think we have a handle on it right now. He only worked out at the mini camp. He got on the field. I mean, he's been working out on his own. He looks terrific. But we'll see in camp. That's I think the second biggest question is, what does Jamaal Charles have left? If he has, you know, any semblance of his old self left, he's going to be used in Mike McCoy's passing game. I mean, this is a match made in heaven, Mike McCoy and Jamaal Charles. If Jamaal can kind of recapture what he was, and you got to remember, he's only played five games in the last 2 years. Now, is that good or bad? I mean, it could be bad. 31 years old, running backs get old fast in this league. But, you know, do you look at it and say, well, he didn't have that wear and tear the last couple of years? Huge question marks. If he is good, he'll push CJ for starting time. And then, of course, Devontae Booker, that would make a terrific trio if Devontae can come back from, he had a tough rookie season last year. He led the team in rushing, but it was 600 yards or so. And he really wasn't ever fully recovered from two knee surgeries that, happened when he was at the University of Utah. So I expect a lot from Devontae. He's the best back out of the backfield as far as catching passes, terrific hands. Those guys are good. Then you've got a terrific ground game, and then that makes, like you said, the quarterback's job a lot easier.
Arnie, does it need to be a running back by committee, as so many people have talked about here with the Giants, or does somebody really need to step forward? Does Charles or Anderson need to be an 18 to 20 carry a game back, especially if Booker's going to be the third down back, as you've kind of laid out?
Yeah, I think, it's always going to be a committee, so to speak, anymore. You know, you're not going to have the Emmitt Smith guys that much, taking the majority of the work, the bell cow of the work. But they would like somebody to step forward. And, if CJ could put together a full season like he has put together half seasons, you know, he'd be a 2,000-yard back. He's terrific. The problem is staying healthy and staying on the field, staying productive. But they would like – I think that they would be careful if Jamal, you know, is what he was, then they're going to be careful with him. But they would like for CJ – they'd like to work him, you know, and really be that that horse that they can turn to. And when he's on, as you saw in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and you've seen him sort of half seasons out of him, he's great. He's as good as any back in the league. And so we'll see if he's going to be that. Of course, he's coming back also from a, you know, a torn MCL in his right knee that knocked him out of the last half of last year. And that was really the death knell for the Broncos' playoff hopes last year. Was once CJ got hurt, they just had nothing back there. Devontae was still coming back, and the other running backs really never caught on. Capri Bibbs got hurt, pulled a hamstring. So they're really having to hope that all these guys come back from injury. You know, Devontae from the injury 2 years ago, but you know he had a tough rookie season because of that. And then they're hoping for Jamal to come back from two tough years in a row, and for CJ to come back from his torn knee. So there's a lot of question marks in the backfield. If all those question marks pan out well, then you've got a terrific, you know, backfield. I put them up there in the top five as far as backfields in this NFL. But again, there's a lot of question marks facing Eric Studisville's room there.
Talking with Arnie Stapleton, who covers the Denver Broncos for the Associated Press. And part of the success of the running game, Arnie, of course, will be dependent on how the offensive line performs. Some mixed results in the last few seasons. So they bring in two new offensive linemen, two guys that lost their starting jobs at points last season. One recovered because Lyle Collins was hurt in Dallas. I'm referring to Ron Leary. And then they also brought in Menelik Watson. How does this offensive line look to you? And do you think that they address the needs such as run blocking in free agency?
Well, they address their needs as much as they could, you know, as well as I do. It's once they get those pads on in training camp and start hitting that we'll get a true gauge for how much they've improved. That offensive line. We thought the offensive line was improved last year, and Russell Okung showed this that he didn't have it. Maybe he does now. I mean, he played 16 games, but he was manhandled at times, and you know, he was grabbing guys coming off the edge, and because he would just get beat so often. And then Donaldson, kind of the same thing. You know, the two free agents they added last year did not pan out. The funny thing is, people were actually feeling better about the offensive line a year ago. Than they are now, because now there's all this skepticism, you know.
That's not good.
Jeff Davidson. Yeah. Jeff Davidson, the offensive line coach, he comes in and, you know, they brought in Garrett Bowles, who started to work with the ones toward the end of the offseason program. So he's starting to get the playbook down. Obviously, he was a two-point guy in college. He's got to learn to play with his, you know, with his hand on the ground and really – learned some footwork, but he's coming along. And the thing that they've added, I think, more than anything, is a nastiness, a venom to that offensive line in Menelik Watson and Ronald Leary. Now, Menelik has to play. He's never been able to put together a full season. You know, Ronald Leary has put together full seasons, but they bring a real nastiness, and so does Garrett Bowles. I think Ryan Ramczyk is probably the more NFL-ready tackle, but they went with Garrett Bowles. And he probably has a higher upside if he can get it. And so right now you got Ronald Leary on the right side and along with Menelik Watson. That could be the key. You know, if those two guys on the right side and then Matt Paradis in the middle. Now, Matt's coming off hip surgeries on both hips. So he's another big question mark. And Connor McGovern has been manning the center spot for all the offseason program, which is good for him. But it's bad if the Broncos don't get Matt Paradis back, because they really need Matt to step in and be the stud that he's been for the last few years, even playing hurt. So that right side could be terrific if those guys stay healthy, and then all of a sudden we've got, you know, some holes for to see what Devontae Booker, Jamal Charles, C.J. Anderson can do.
You mentioned Garrett Bowles, so I want to stay with the draft picks for a second because there are two guys who intrigue me, Arnie, about the Broncos picks. DeMarcus Walker out of Florida State, the defensive end, who I happen to like a lot. drafted in the second round. And the other one is a bit of a question mark because of his injuries. And people kept telling me going into the draft, they didn't even know if he was going to play this year. That'd be tight end Jake Butt, who was taken in the fifth round out of Michigan. I liked him a lot too, but because of the injury, not knowing if he's going to play. What can you tell me about those two guys?
Well, I think, you know, Walker is going to step right into the rotation. He's a guy that they had, you know, rated a lot higher than where they took him. He's a no-nonsense guy. I think he can step in and make an immediate impact.
Yeah,
he's going to help plug the holes on run defense and put some more rush there. You know, they're hurting a little bit. They've lost Shaq Barrett. Or they've lost Kyle Pecco to injuries. So he's going to be able to step in, I think, make an immediate impact. As far as Jake Butt, you know, they're very confident that he's going to be able to play. He'll probably start off, you know, on the sideline for the first few weeks, but they're confident he can step in and play. And you know, they had him as a first-round grade before he got hurt. I think he could be one of the steals of the draft. You know, if he can come back, you know, he's had that injury in college, you know, so now you're talking about a guy with, you know, two knee problems. However, if he can come back, and all indications are that he's going to come back, he's not going to have to sit out the year, you know, he can really add to that tight end group. And, you know, he's obviously the best one on the team, the best tight end. You know, they're expecting Jeff Heuermann to show up for the first time ever, really, in his third year. And Virgil Green is a terrific, smart player. A.J. Derby, they have high hopes for him. But really, you know, none of those three hold a candle wick to Jake Butt and Jake's potential. So, you know, if Jake can be the guy they think he is and quickly, then he changes the whole dynamic of the tight end core. And that would be huge in a Mike McCoy offense.
Yeah, again,
Arnie,
I'm a big Jake Butt fan, but I have to tell you, everybody at the Combine, I was out in Indianapolis, and even post-Combine, so many people, wherever you talk to, they were not giving him any chance to play this year. I only had one person say to me, maybe he's got a chance to play in October. And by dropping all the way to the fifth round, that says to me that most of the NFL probably didn't think he was going to play this year either. So how is it that the Broncos seem so sure that he is going to be able to play? Has he done some kind of miraculous recovery over the last couple of months of the spring?
Well, I wouldn't say it's miraculous, but I do know that their medical team, which, you know, let's face it, they have a really good medical team with the Denver Broncos. You know, they were the outliers, like you said. They saw him and said, we think he can play, you know, right away. He's the safe thing to do, obviously, would be, you know, sit him down for the whole year, let him get better. But they thought, you know what, he's had the surgery in you know, early enough in the off season that they think he can come back. He's been in the huddle, believe it or not, with the players and then jogging off the field, you know. So that's an indication to me that they're planning on playing him because he was in the huddle at the mini camps at the OTAs, you know, to get the mental reps or to get, you know, to understand, you know, the things that are being said in the huddle, what the play is going to be. They wouldn't be doing that if they were planning or if they believed he was going to be a guy that wasn't going to play this year. You know, they're a guy. He's a guy that they think, like you said, can be contributing in October. It can actually be a factor down the stretch. So that, to me, is an indication that's all plans are go with Jake Butt this year.
A lot of teams missed on that. If that indeed does happen, because he is a player.
Well, it could turn out to be great value if indeed he starts contributing in October. Artie, you also were referring to DeMarcus Walker, and I want to switch gears here to the defense, and we'll get into some personnel in the groupings, but I think one of the biggest storylines for the Denver defense this offseason is the fact that Wade Phillips is not there anymore. He's got that same position with the Rams. However, this guy may be falling under the radar. The guy that's replacing him, Joe Woods, and I'm sure you could provide more insight, has already been on staff. So my big question is, how significant of a loss is Wade Phillips, or is it not that bad considering they basically looked at a candidate internally who already knows that defense inside and out?
Right. I think we'd be, you know, remiss to say that it's not a big loss. The simple fact that they've led, you know, they've had the best defense historically the last couple of seasons, and Wade Phillips was terrific. The one thing, though, is that Joe Woods is not coming in and revamping the defense. He's tweaking it, and that's a big deal. Now, you know, they could have given a contract extension to Wade Phillips, and they said, you know what, we would rather keep Joe Woods and promote him over this terrific defensive coordinator that really had a lot to do with the Super Bowl, you know, just a year, 2 years ago. And they decided to keep Joe because they were certain that they were going to lose Joe to another job. And, you know, let's face it, Wade's long in the tooth, and who knows how many years he's going to coach again. And they didn't want to lose this young guy, Joe Woods, you know, who, by the way, comes with, you know, a endorsement from, you know, Wade Phillips himself. He worked with him. And he said, and Joe has said, look, we're not installing a new defense. It's the same defense. I'm just going to add some sugar to it, which I think he means he's going to mix things up. You're not going to be as predictable. You know, the only problem with Wade Phillips the last couple of years was they were so good that it was basically him going out there and saying, okay, you know what we're going to do. We know what you're going to do, and we're better than you. So, you know, we're just going to prove it. And so they were very predictable. Therefore, they were giving up first down or first drive touchdowns a lot of the year. And that's not normally a problem unless you have an awful offense like the Broncos did. Yeah. So they were playing in a hole right away. And so Joe says, well, no, we're not going to, you know, they know what we do well, but we're going to throw in some curveballs, so to speak, right away. And so that they're going to add the unpredictability factor, which I think will make that transition pretty seamless. And remember, you still got you lost DeMarcus Ware, you lost Kayvon Webster, backup, but you really have that whole defense back.
I don't know if we lost Arnie there. We may have lost him. Oh, no.
There he is. He's still there.
Okay. You were breaking up there for a second, Arnie. You mentioned DeMarcus Ware, they lost, as well as his backup. We didn't hear the rest of that.
I was just saying, you know, it's pretty much the same defense with the exception of Ware retiring. You've got pretty much the same defense, and it's not big.
Arnie, you know what? It looks like we may have lost the connection. If you can hear us, we'll try to give you a ring back to see maybe if we can get you on to ask you maybe a question or two. Looks like we lost the connection there. Arnie Stapleton, we were hearing from, who covers the Denver Broncos for the Associated Press.
You know what's interesting to me, Lance? The best two defenses in the NFL last season were the Broncos and the Giants, and both of those teams did what they could to maintain those defensive lineups.
And that's not easy to do.
It's not easy to do, and I don't think it's a coincidence because they know, both of those teams know, even though the Broncos were not a playoff team last year, both of those teams know that that's the easiest ticket to becoming a postseason team.
Well, if you look at the numbers in terms of defense and points per game allowed, Denver was certainly up there. All right, we have Arnie Stapleton back on the line, who covers the Broncos for the Associated Press. So, Arnie, you were talking about the defense is pretty much still intact, so that at least is going to be a benefit for new defensive coordinator Joe Woods as he looks to make some tweaks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I'm driving by an Air Force base, and they jammed the signals here pretty good.
well, at least we know it's effective. It's still working. Yeah.
I'm just glad there are no MPs escorting you away. That's the better news.
No, there you go. No, those are tax dollars at work, so we know they're working.
Exactly.
I was just saying there's a seamless, you know,
I don't know, maybe it's still jamming here in terms of the Air Force Base being in the vicinity. It looks like we are losing the connection with Arnie again in terms of his insight on the Denver Broncos defense.
Arnie, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate the time, Arnie. We're going to let you go there just because of the ins and outs on the phone line, but we do appreciate the time that you gave us here on Giants.com.
And remember, when the sign says do not enter, do not enter. Not a good idea.
All right, so that is
okay, thanks, man.
You got it. Arnie Stapleton, who covers the Denver Broncos for the Associated Press, running into some communication issues, I guess.
We got the bulk of it.
Oh, absolutely.
The only thing that I would have asked him with my last question would have been about Shane Ray, who had 8 sacks last year in only his second NFL season. And I think, you know, he's the next generation of Broncos star defenders. And if you consider that a breakout year, maybe you do. 8 sacks is certainly a nice number. But if that wasn't his breakout year, I think this is going to be primed to be his breakout year as one of the stars of that defense.
Well, I'm sure they feel okay about losing DeMarcus Ware to retirement, knowing the way that Shane Ray has performed. That at least gives them some type of a luxury that he's become somewhat of a proven commodity. And then, I mean, the other aspect that we didn't really talk about is the fact, similar to the Giants, Paul, you know, this is a secondary that also is extremely polished and extremely deep.
And it's all back.
Correct. So that's another thing that I think relates to the Giants. And remember, we were doing a show a few weeks back. Remember, NFL.com was ranking the secondary.
Yes.
Who was number one? Denver was number one.
Mm-hmm. And understandable.
Surprise. Yeah.
I mean, look at these guys.
Chris Harris, Aqib Talib.
They're good.
Darian Stewart, T.J. Ward.
They're
Bradley
really good.
Bradley Roby. You know, they got plenty of playmakers.
And remember, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie was a Bronco several years ago till the Giants stole him in free agency.
So he has experience in that department, too. Denver's always been known for having its strong secondaries. Everybody talks about their pass rush, but a big reason why they've had success over recent years is because of their secondary.
And, of course, they got our old friend Brandon McManus kicking out there.
Absolutely.
With the cannon leg and making use of that thin air out in Colorado. And he just one of many young kickers over the years that the Giants have produced and gone on to really good NFL careers.
And speaking of NFL.com rankings, important to note that the NFL Top 100 Players finale is going to be tonight. Mm-hmm. Odell will be somewhere in the top 10. That's 8 p.m. Eastern on the NFL Network, so you can certainly tune in for that. And then Giants.com will have a full report. In the meantime, let's reopen up the phone lines. Want to hear from you. You want to get into some off-season chatter, what to expect in training camp, depth chart questions. It's all up for debate here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Tim is in New Jersey. Tim, what's happening?
No, nothing. I got a question for you.
Sure.
Should the Giants sign Justin Pugh to a long-term extension before he becomes a free agent after this coming season?
Well, it would be a nice idea, and I'm sure that they'd like to do it, and I'm sure that he'd like to get it done. You do have some number issues to deal with. The Giants do have a little bit of room under the cap this year, and, of course, you have the opportunity up until the midpoint of the season to do a deal like that, and then at one point it cuts off, and then you just have to wait till the end of the season. I will tell you this. I know Justin's the kind of guy, and I don't want to speak for him, but he's the kind of guy who, as I recall, may or may not have said, I think he did at one point, that he didn't want to talk about contracts during the season. So I suspect if they don't get it done by opening day, they probably are going to have to wait till the year is out. But I think his priority is to stay. I think the Giants' priority is to keep him.
All right, Tim. You got another question, Tim?
I got a question.
Sure.
The Giants, after picking up his top option for next year, should the Giants sign Odell Beckham Jr. to a 5-year extension through 2023?
All right, Tim. Well, we appreciate the phone call. Referring to Odell Beckham, they did pick up the 5th-year option, so the urgency is not necessarily there, knowing that he's going to be around, at least under contract, for another year. There are a number of players in that 2014 mm-hmm. draft class, Paul, that have already received extensions. But once again, I think by picking up the 5th-year option, there perhaps is not necessarily that urgency factor in terms of making sure that the extension gets done now as opposed to maybe waiting another year.
Well, we know this. He's under contract this season.
Yeah.
He's under contract next season. And in 2019, the Giants could franchise him if they wanted to.
That flexibility there.
They could also then franchise him in 2020 if they wanted to.
And then they could do it again.
So to be honest, they could handcuff Odell Beckham Jr. for the next 4 seasons, including this season, if they wanted to. I don't know that they do. In fact, as we all know, it's better for the cap if you don't franchise a guy because you can lower his cap number by spreading out the money. So if I were the Giants, my suspicion is that they would try to work a new long-term deal with him after this season is over, before the opening day of 2018. That's my suspicion. But Who knows? We know John Mara has said he wants Odell Beckham to be a Giant for the rest of his career.
Well, and then you look at similarly how they've handled other players like Eli Manning right before he was entering the final year of his contract. They were able to get done an extension. That seems to be the protocol or the operation that the Giants follow in terms of trying to lock up.
It may not happen till next July or next August, you know, but I do expect, I would assume, just based on some logic and the way these guys feel about him and the way he feels about the Giants, I think it probably makes some good sense that they get it done before opening day next year. Well, I'm gonna put my chips in that area.
Well, and that's obviously from the team perspective. Now, you also need to take into consideration from the player's perspective, you know, does the player want to get locked up? Does the player want to see how the rest of the market plays out? Does Odell Beckham and his representatives want to wait to see what, like, a guy like Mike Evans gets because he's in the same draft class? You just have to at least understand the team may want to lock up the player, Paul, is my point. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the player has the same amount of urgency to get it done as well. And that has to be taken into consideration.
It always takes two to make a deal.
Yeah. So you have to look at that for all positions. And the same thing I would throw out for Justin Pugh, too. You know, the team may want to say, hey, we want to lock this player up. We want to see how the contract's going to be spread out over the next few years so then we know how we're going to operate with other players in the free agent market. But the player and their representatives are going to have to meet you halfway and have the willingness to say, we also want to get it done. Or they may want to just see how the market plays out and how comparable players are getting deals done across the landscape, which a lot of players do. You know, they want to wait to see, hey, I'm always compared to so-and-so. Let me see if he works out his contract. Same thing with quarterbacks. It's about timing, not so much your production. It's about when your contract is up. We saw that, Paul, recently with Derek Carr. He just got a deal done with the Oakland Raiders, and he's now going to have, based on reports, the highest average annual salary in terms of the average math. Now, most people, if you want to have the debate, is Derek Carr the best quarterback in the NFL right now? I wouldn't necessarily label him as the best quarterback, but the point is, when his contract came up or when he was due for an extension, gave him the opportunity to maximize his wealth.
It's the way it always works out.
That's how the market plays out. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's head back to the phone lines. Blake is in Connecticut. Blake, what's happening?
Well, I just wanted to offer an explanatory footnote to Len's comment about that 1959 Giant-Browns game. My father and a friend and I happened to be at that game, and it was a very scary situation. Everyone was in great humor. The Giants were just great that day, but it was bitterly, bitterly cold. Everyone was drinking to great excess, but everyone was happy until about 3 minutes, 42 seconds left in the game. Two young kids stole the ball, during a timeout, and the police chased them, and evidently the crowd felt that they were overly aggressive and, people just went wild. There were fights all around us, and they did storm the field. The security, police, the ushers were just overwhelmed, tore the goalpost down. The Browns players were scared. I mean, it was a riot. And then the game, I think, took 25 minutes to begin again, and only, I think, because they said the Giants might forfeit if order was not restored. It was quite a thing. And anyway, I just wanted to share that because, you know, I happened to be a witness to that event.
Okay, Blake, you have anything else in terms of the current team, or that was all you wanted to share?
Well, I could go back history since Paul's here.
I don't know if we want to necessarily get into a whole historical dissertation for the sake of all the listeners. I respect your history. I respect Paul's history. But we do also want to try to bring it a little bit closer to what's relevant to today's team. Yes.
You know, I'll just share one bit of history because, so many football books have written that in December 7th, 1941, the Polo Grounds, that the attack on Pearl Harbor was announced over the loudspeaker, making the game meaningless. It's a wonderful narrative, great story, but it's apocryphal. What really happened was they did call for Colonel Donovan, and I assume that was Wild Bill Donovan, OSS precursor of the CIA. but there was never an announcement. Now, eight of my family was there. Of course, I was not born yet, but they swear to their graves that story was untrue. It's kind of too bad because it's a great story, but people can still go with it if they want. As far as today's game, I've been an observer, fanatical fan for 6 years, and like you all, I am so excited about the upcoming season. I think it's going to be fantastic. We're going to generate some offense and points. We have a stellar defense. And like so many of your fans on this program, I've been a big fan for some time. I just can't wait, and I always value your insights, and I thank you very much for taking my call.
All right, Blake, we'll appreciate you tuning in.
Thanks
so much for the phone call. 201-939-4513, the telephone number. We got Nick in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening?
Hey, fellas, how are you?
Doing all right, Nick.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
I got a question, Paul.
Yes.
Well, actually, for the other caller, if he could answer, but he can't anymore, since he was just talking about that game. I bet you there was one guy in the stadium that wasn't scared.
And who was that?
Know who that guy was? Jim Brown.
For the Cleveland Browns, yes.
Well, if it was 1959, then he was in that game then, right, Paul?
I was not at that game. In fact, I know nothing of the riot that apparently took place.
I didn't know we were going to go over Giants history today.
That's how she would be. That's a long time
that
ago.
That would have been his era. I was actually looking up that box score as he was talking about it, because I know nothing about this riot that he's speaking of, or this ruckus that he's speaking of. In fact, I've never heard of it in all my years of 35 years of covering this organization. I've never heard of this 1959 crowd control problem when the Giants apparently crushed the Browns at Yankee Stadium.
Well, Brown was in that game, to answer your question. He did play.
He would have been in that game.
Yeah.
So I bet you that you know Jim Brown as much as anybody, Paul. I bet you he was the one guy that was like, man, this don't bother me. I've seen a lot worse.
he was tougher than bricks, that's for sure.
Tough guy, tough as nails. Speaking of stuff like that, one thing I wanted to say, the other day a caller called in about, like, you know, things for you guys to do, like the trivia and stuff like that. A caller, you guys make like a little trivia, you know, some shows you bring in trivia questions like that, and they could maybe possibly win, you know, something like come to a practice or something like that. You know what I mean? I thought that was a really good idea. I've been watching a lot of these 30 for 30s since you were talking about it, Paul, and the Football Lives. I've always watched them. Do you watch that stuff? I mean, those are really good to watch. I mean,
NFL Network's of Football Life, they do a phenomenal job, much like ESPN used to do with the Sports Century series, and now they do with the 30 for 30.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Not just about football, about all sports.
No doubt.
They've put together great documentaries. Yeah,
they put together some really good stuff. I love it. I'm not so big on some of these, like, top 100s, like you were saying before, because look where they have Landon Collins. I mean, I think he should be, you know, ahead of Richard Sherman, don't you think, when it comes to that? I mean, he has...
Well, they're different players. One's a safety, one's a corner, so I don't know that it's fair to put them on the same list anyway. But I should also add Giants Chronicles, done by our own production staff right down the hall. That's a pretty darn good historical series as well.
Oh, yeah, I watch that, you know, especially when the season starts. I always get up early anyway. I'm always turning that on Sunday. It gets me going for the Giants that day, you know, like, all right, put my jersey on, ready to go. But, yeah, that 30 for 30 stuff's good. I saw one on the Boz the other day. I mean, man, wow, he was some linebacker in college, wasn't he?
Great,
I think
great
he had
linebacker.
Like 22 tackles in a game one time, man. I didn't see that game. I was pretty young then. I was probably like 10 years old. But
yeah, well, Harry Carson had 23 tackles in a game against the Packers at Giants Stadium one night.
Oh, yeah?
He sure did.
There you go. But you just taught me something, Paul. Now I can brag about that. Harry Carson was one of a kind.
What you want to tell people was that was the night, it was a night game, and the lights went out. There was a blackout for part of the game. They actually had to halt the game because the lights went out, and it was right before the work stoppage.
Oh,
so
wow.
Football truly took a blackout that night in the Meadowlands. And Harry played one of, if not the greatest game a middle linebacker could play. He was phenomenal.
23 tackles. I think that explains it all. That's unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
They have LT on the in the top 10. They have him number 3 on best, you know, pass rushers, you know, of all time. I think those shows are – I mean, of course they have, you know, Reggie and Bruce, you know, right there, Bruce Smith. They mm-hmm. were phenomenal. The record stands for itself. But they said it was unfair for LT because he was, you know, once Bill Parcells, I'm sorry, he unleashed him and let him line up wherever he wanted, you know what I mean? Then they said that was kind of unfair. So it brings me to the next
guy. Wait a second. That was unfair. That was unfair. Lawrence was going up against double and triple teams, okay?
Yeah.
He was going up against tackles who were 40, 50 pounds bigger than he was.
Yeah.
And
yep.
It's unfair that Lawrence got to roll over and move wherever he wanted to. Are you kidding me?
Man. I wanted to throw the remote at the TV.
Ridiculous.
So it brings me to Kevin Green. They did the same thing with him getting into the Hall of Fame because he was just a pure pass rusher. I mean, what do these guys come up with this stuff? Kevin Green, I haven't even mentioned him ever on a show. There was another guy. Remember I told you the position I played in high school, Art Plunkett, the old offensive tackle from the Patriots we talked about. He said, you want to play this position? You just got to go where the ball goes. And I was like, yes, I love it. And that was another guy, Derek Thomas. But he didn't stand up too much. But LT and Kevin Green, I mean, I loved Kevin Green. He was
Kevin
awesome.
Green was more versatile awesome. Than Derek Thomas because he could stand up and he could also put his
yes.
hand in the dirt. However, because Derek, with all due respect, by the way, to Derek Thomas, pure
yes,
pass rusher, sold out against the pass on every snap, never played the run ever in his entire career,
no.
totally one-dimensional player.
Pure speed rusher.
Kevin Green, yeah, no question.
Kevin Green,
no question. Kevin Green, better all-around player than Derek Thomas, but do
yep.
not put him in the same room with Lawrence Taylor. Don't ever do
but
that.
But whenever you put Lawrence Taylor and Kevin Green next to each other, there's one thing about Lawrence Taylor that people don't look at. He almost had 1,100 tackles.
Lawrence Taylor was the greatest defensive player
ever.
Who ever walked the face of the earth, period.
When I come to see you guys, you'll see what jersey I'm wearing, so that explains
Take care of
it
yourself.
All
right, Nick, appreciate
Thanks,
the phone
Nick.
Call. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. We got Andre in Rochester. Andre, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing all right, Andre. Hi. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the depth chart, but I also wanted to touch on Landon Collinson. Just because fans always like to go back on the last year's play and they want to talk about the play that really made the defense. Well, we thought the defense was legit, and everybody goes back to Landon Collins' pick of the
Rams game you're talking about?
Yeah, the Rams game.
Yeah.
I like to go back to the Jonathan Casillas fourth down play when he stopped Travis West for getting into the end zone. That's when I knew that our defense had something special. And I wanted to ask both of you guys a question. I wanted to ask Paul who we thought corners 4, 5, or 6 were. And Lance, who do you think the wide receivers 4, 5, or 6 were? And I took your answers off the air.
All right, Andre, appreciate the phone call.
You take the receivers.
Well, as far as the receivers go, you know, after you got Dwayne Harris, to me, is number 4. And it depends on how they utilize him mm-hmm. during the course of special teams and wide receiver at training camp, but I still think he's still solidified as the number 4 spot. And then, you know, you're going to have Roger Lewis and Tavares King trying to hold on to their 5 and 6 spots, which they had last season. The one guy that I could see pushing one of those two was Travis Rudolph. I mean, that I could see being a main mm-hmm. threat to Roger Lewis and Tavares King. Outside of Travis Rudolph, I need to see a little bit more when they put the pads on to think that I'm going to move somebody else beyond King as well as Lewis. So right now, Rudolph is the one to watch to push for a 5th or a 6th spot. But as it stands right now, I think the 6 are as is from what we saw last season, and Rudolph is on the outside looking in on that 7th spot.
I think Rudolph is actually going to make it.
Well, I mean, I still have to see him put – I mean, we've seen him flash, but he hasn't done anything to me to surpass King and Lewis at this point. King and Lewis I've seen in games with the pads on.
The preseason will tell a lot.
Yeah.
But my money would be on him if I'm going to project.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
If I'm going to project. Valentino Blake, Dante Dion, and Michael Hunter. Put whatever number on them that you will. Those guys right now are 4, 5, and 6. I don't necessarily believe that all three will be here opening day. Just an opinion. I would not at all be surprised if somebody comes free during the cut. And remember, one cut now from 90 to 53 across the board in the league. I would not be surprised if the Giants wind up picking up a corner at some point during the course of the late summer.
Well, it is one cut, Paul, in terms of the date, but I think it's also important to note that you don't have to wait for that date to get down to 53. We're going to see teams, they're going to start to cut players as they did normally.
I don't know about that.
I have a feeling they're going to get rid of players. I don't think, because here's the thing, when there were the previous dates and the deadlines were to get it down to 75 and 53, not every team was waiting till 4 o'clock on that day to get it down. They sometimes let guys go the day before.
About 85% of them did.
Well, maybe perhaps most of them, but I still think teams, especially if they're going to look to switch players and somebody's out there that they want to sign, you're going to see some games of chess where they may get rid of 5 guys to open up roster spots and then bring 5 new ones in.
But
I don't think they're going to wait till the end.
The owners voted this rule in because they want those players to be held on to
for the fourth preseason game.
Because they want them playing in the fourth preseason game because they want to cut down on injuries to guys that they really believe they're going to keep. If the owners voted it that way, trust me, the GMs are not going to be floating those guys out in the marketplace early, because then it goes against what the owners wanted.
Well, but there's a difference in terms of getting rid of 25 guys versus if you cut 7 before the deadline.
You could,
that's what I'm referring
okay.
to. I'm not saying that they're going to get rid of 25
okay, but,
2 days
but
before.
Those four or
they get rid of maybe
that
7 or 8 guys.
And those possible. Few handfuls that come floating out a few days before, those guys are going to be worthless.
Well,
those
depends.
Are not
going to.
Those are not
going to
be guys
are.
Who are worth anything.
I think it all depends on the scouting department. It would not surprise me if a guy gets cut before the fourth preseason game, and he may latch on with another team for that fourth preseason game. You could certainly see that. I don't think that's a stretch.
I think it can happen, but I don't think you're going to see the kind of player that you think you're going to see in those few releases that come before that game. I just don't see it.
Well, it all depends on if the team feels they want to see a guy perform in an extra preseason game. If they feel they need another preseason game to determine how effective the player is, they're not going to get rid of that player. If they already pretty much have an idea that he's not making the 53, I could see teams get rid of guys so that maybe they can open up roster spots
to bring
in some others.
You just made my argument for me, because any guys that are released before that fourth preseason game are going to be the absolute bottom and bottom
bottom
of the barrel.
But that doesn't
mean
they're
not. And those
teams
will be sure they're bottom of the barrel, or they won't cut them.
But that doesn't mean what I'm saying is they're not value to other teams. They may not be value to the team that currently.
No, if you're tripling the bottom of the barrel, you're not worth anything to anybody.
Listen, it depends. If they flashed in a game or two in the previous preseason games, it's possible a team may take a chance on them.
Could happen.
I don't think there's any rule book that says they wouldn't get signed.
Could happen. Unlikely. For those folks, enjoy the CFL.
Well, we'll see. Listen, we've seen interesting things where guys even struggle with one team and they get some second chance opportunities.
It can happen.
I would not rule
not
out
often.
Anything.
Not often.
Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Ravon is in Virginia. Ravon, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Paul and Lance? How y'all doing today?
Doing all right. What do you got for us?
Doing good. I just want to give I'm calling in to give two thumbs up to Jerry Reese, basically, for a lot of the work that he's done, the big turnaround. Not mainly speaking about just the 11-5 record. I'm mainly speaking about all these hungry young players that we got coming up. You know, the under-the-radar signing, the Devin Taylor signing, I really love. I think that completes, well, if he makes the team, but I think that, and I think he will, but I think that completes, you know, some of the one piece in the personnel for the NASCAR package, which Spax hasn't been able to use in a while. With Eric Flowers, and offensive line, period. I think we're on our way up. A lot of Giants fans, you know, still they forget that Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart are very young. They're very young. The experience that they've had so far since they've been in the league have been a lot more than, you know, most of, especially Bobby Hart, a 7th-round draft pick. You know, by the time they actually get good, it may not be, you know, this year. to where he's, you know, knocking people down and looking like a pro bowler. But I think he's on his way. He's on his way, and that's very, you know, assuring to know. Jack Rabbit, you know, we got him from the Rams, but his main thing was just being patient, not jumping on so many balls. A lot of the stuff with the players that we brought over and the pieces they've added, it's just little small things that we need to take care of. And opening up the middle of the field with Evan Engram this year is going to be big, something we haven't been able to do in a long time since Martellus Bennett. Let me see, what is the question that I wanted to ask? Paul, what do you think, you know, how good do you think our offense can be, basically, with the offensive line still staying intact and the continuity? If these guys actually do their job, and I think they did a very good job going down the stretch last year leading into the playoffs. With Paul Perkins running, how much more effective do you think we can be this year if they actually hold strong?
Well, if you agree with us that, you know, they were certainly better pass blocking than they were run blocking, I think it's safe to say they were probably right on the verge between, you know, the bottom third, right? You know, if you broke up the NFL teams into thirds, they're probably right there at the bottom of the second third. I think that's probably fair to say. What they've got to do is somehow get to the top of that second third. And I think that, to me, would be enough to get them to where they want to go and to compete for the Lombardi Trophy. I don't think they've got to be quite into the, you know, top five, top six, but they got to be somewhere in the 12 range. 12, yeah. 13, 14, you know, be in the upper half at least. Okay, I think if they could do that, and I don't think that's a stretch. I think it's absolutely possible. That's right. Good enough. That's good enough. With the weapons they have and the defense they have, that's good enough. And by the way, can I add one other thing to your comment about the offensive linemen? You talked about both Hart and Flowers being extremely young. And you have all heard now for months how I've tried to tell you, without getting very specific, about how hard these guys have worked this offseason, far beyond what they had done in the past to make themselves better. I also want to stress to you, do you remember William Roberts, who was a Pro Bowl lineman for the Giants during the Parcells era? William Roberts came to the Giants, and for the first 2 years of his career, he had a lot of trouble. He had weight trouble. He was viewed as somewhat lazy, somewhat undisciplined, had technique problems, was a part-time starter, and it was only in year three when he became a full-time starter and suddenly blossomed into a quality player that his career really jumped off. And he wound up becoming a Pro Bowl lineman, albeit a guard, for a Super Bowl championship team. Look at William Roberts as an example when you talk about Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers. It is possible. It can be done.
Oh, yeah. It definitely can be done. It can be done. And just the fact of the matter that, you know, we've got, I think, out of all the teams in the NFC East, we are the team that's probably the best put together, meaning that we have less question marks than a lot of the other teams.
Yeah.
As far as starters, you know, we have a lot of returning starters that will be big. And plus, we've got some new pieces and wrinkles added in that is going to be new. You know, no different from Chip Kelly coming to the Eagles and bringing those flash cards. You see how big it was when he came over, when the Redskins coach came over his first year with Robert Griffin. It was something new. It took a while for teams in the NFC East to actually catch up to it. But I think we're in that position now to where we've got so many new pieces along with the pieces that we brought back that were so strong. It's going to be amazing this season, man. And I just wanted to go ahead and leave y'all with that, man. Great show. Y'all keep doing what y'all doing, man.
All right, Ravon, appreciate the phone call. The coaching staff is also intact from last season, which I think is a big bonus for the Giants. The fact that the coaches know the players know the coaches for the most part. There's continuity, which wasn't necessarily the case last season when Ben McAdoo brought in some new faces on the coaching staff. So guys were getting to know the coaches and vice versa. I don't think that's necessarily an issue or a hurdle that they're going to have to overcome this offseason, which I think easily could fall under the radar. And, you know, I said this from the get-go. I think the big theme this offseason was the depth chart. You know, that's what has changed for the Giants, them trying to bolster spots 4, 5, and 6, as we were talking earlier with the corners, with the wide receivers, you know, backup linebackers, offensive line, the backups. I mean, if you look across the board, that to me was a huge theme. How can we increase the competition to not necessarily worry about who's going to start, but in the event that we lose a starter due to injury, can somebody step in and then the production doesn't fall off? That, I think, was a humongous storyline
well,
this offseason.
Every NFL team, except the Patriots, we always have to exclude them because
they beat to their own drum.
They're just so special. Right. But every NFL team will go through cycles, and they're going to go through time periods where they've got to retool X numbers of starters. Then every once in a while, they hit that stride where they're like, you know what? We really dig our starters. Now the focus is on the depth chart. That's where the Giants sit now. And that's why we talk about them having the window that they have to make a run. Because usually teams only have that window of 3, 4, 5 years or so where they can keep guys together, where guys are still young enough and productive enough to be quality playoff-type starters. And you can take a legitimate sprint towards trying to win the Lombardi Trophy. And then all of a sudden it starts turning around again. And now, well, now we got to tweak. Now we got to rebuild. Now we got to do this. Now we got to do that. It happens to every team except the Patriots.
Well, it's their style, the risks they take, who they draft. Obviously, that's why they've been so effective in terms of having guys step in and immediately impact the overall production. I think the Giants, when they looked at what happened in the Packers playoff game, they're saying, hey, that's why this was a focus this offseason. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Chris is in Rochester. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, B-Dow. How's it going?
Hi.
Doing well, Chris. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so I wanted to give you guys a shout-out. I mean, Giants.com, your Fact or Fiction article was absolutely tremendous a couple weeks ago. I even tweeted you out. I thought you guys did a great job covering all the aspects and giving us all the intel that fans usually don't get. And so kudos to you guys for that Fact or Fiction article.
Well, thanks for reading.
Thank you.
My question for you guys is, you know, obviously with the break coming up here and, you know, players not getting back into training camp until late July, specifically talking rookies, what do you expect from them? What do the coaches expect from them coming back into training camp after having, you know, mandatory mini camp and OTAs? What do you expect out of, like, you know, Evan Engram? What do you expect out of the rookies class, the running back, all those guys coming into camp? Do you specifically expect them to be just, you know, tidied up on the playbook or kind of still, you know, In the glance of things?
It's very simple. There are three things the coach asked his players for when they left, and this especially goes for the rookies. One, make sure you stay out of trouble. Don't want to get a phone call in the middle of the night that something went bad. That's number one. Carry yourself like a pro. That's number one. Number two, stay in good condition, stay in shape, because it's going to be hit the ground running when you get to training camp. This is no time to start enjoying red velvet cake for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Okay? That's not going to work. Or in Landon Collins' case, pudding,
yes.
Not a good idea.
From Spags' wife, correct.
Number three, make sure you keep looking at the tapes and the cut-ups that they've given you, because you want to be mentally sharp. You want to retain as much as you were able to get during the spring and bring that with you when you get to training camp. They don't want to have to reteach the stuff that they've already tried to sample with these players over the early part of the year.
Great stuff. I appreciate it, guys. Keep up the good work and continue to keep doing what you guys are doing.
Hi, Chris. Appreciate the phone call. It's also important to note that the rookies actually stayed an additional week after the team broke.
Correct.
That usually is protocol, but, you know, they were able to hang around, get a little bit more acclimated in terms of what they should be focusing on during the course of the offseason when the rest of the veterans already left the facility.
They had a rookie symposium last week with the Giants and Jets combo together in a meeting. The Jets, I believe the Giants went down to the Jets facility one day, and then the Jets rookies came up to the Giants facility the next day. And the league puts together a symposium to try to acclimate these guys quicker into the NFL way of life. And it's not just about, hey, you got to learn your playbook. It's also, hey, now you're a professional, okay? You know, that check starts coming, and you need to know how to handle it. You need to know you get your direct deposit set up at the bank if you didn't have one in college.
Yes.
You know, these are the kinds of things that they kind of help them out with to make it an easy transition to the pro game.
And Davis Webb, he was talking to the media, and perhaps he's not going to be nearly as impactful, at least all Giants fans are hoping, compared to the rest of the class. But he even said he was briefly going to go down to one of his former teammates' camps and then come back to Jersey and pretty much hang around here, continue to study the playbook, continue to get acclimated in the area.
He was only going to miss a couple days.
Yeah, so
I mean, he was getting back to the books up here.
Exactly. So, I mean, this overall rookie class, I mean, if you just look at how they conducted themselves, how they've interacted with the media, this is a focus group. You get the glimpse of what they've brought to the table already, and I don't think there's any concern that they're not going to be focused on the big picture perspective while they're away from the team. As far as realistically, you know, who can make the biggest impact, at least in terms of their first year in the NFL, Engram's going to have the biggest opportunity.
Yes.
Because within the offense, how they hopefully will utilize him, what he could do on special teams. I mean, it goes without saying he's going to have opportunity number one. I'm curious your perspective from listening to what Spags had to say, Paul. To me, it's not a lock that Dalvin Tomlinson is going to be the starting defensive tackle next to Snacks. The more and more I listen to Spags, it seems as if Robert Thomas has a very legitimate shot, as does Jay Bromley. This is not Dalvin Tomlinson is penciled in and the other two guys are chasing him. This, to me, is a wide-open competition between the three. That's just my takeaway from listening to what Spags had to say.
Yeah, I think Spags has certainly been very positive about both Thomas and Bromley, and I understand that because he wants competition there. And those three guys, I think, are going to go into camp perhaps on an even plane. So I agree with you in that I don't think it's automatically Tomlinson's spot, but I do believe that everybody thinks that because he was a second-round pick, he may have a leg up on the other guys. Now, that may be more hopeful and wishful and optimistic thinking, because when you use a number two on a guy, you'd like to see him produce sooner rather than later. But I'm more inclined to agree with you that it's probably more of an even competition than we think. And even if Tomlinson doesn't win the job as the starter in week one, he probably will within the first month of the season.
Well,
I would expect that.
And that's fine. I'm just looking at it week one, game one. I would not
against
be surprised.
Against Dallas, in Dallas, they might start the veteran.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if Robert Thomas or Jay Bromley or maybe somebody else that they bring in before training camp or during training camp is actually penciled in. And remember, it's a different roster, but Jonathan Hankins was a second-round pick, and he did not start from day one. I understand they had Linval Joseph. It was a little bit different. I get that.
Chris Canty was here, too.
Correct. So they had some established veterans who knew the system. I get that. But my point is, and I'm just reading this into what Spags had to say. It's not what I'm necessarily seeing on the field. It's just he has talked up Bromley and Robert Thomas as almost as if they're like the forgotten children because Tomlinson was a high draft pick. And I'm saying don't overlook Thomas and Bromley.
And I think that's fair. And again, Spags is excited about the competition at that spot, okay? And he should be, because quite frankly, if you went down deeper into the draft, while we talked about how the line had a lot of good prospects in the cupboard, they were more defensive ends than they were defensive tackles. Not a ton of quality 4-3 defensive tackles in this draft. So he was very pleased, that is Spags, to get one.
As far as the rest of the rookie class, Davis Webb, we know where he's at. Wayne Gallman, special teams is going to be something to watch, Paul, as far as I'm concerned with Gallman heading into training camp. Because let's go back a year ago. Paul Perkins did not have any special teams work at UCLA. It was very rare that he was being utilized in that facet of the team. And Tom Quinn talked about, by the time the middle of the season came around, they coached Perkins up so much that they felt good about throwing him in on various scenarios. So Gallman, I think, is going to have to get to the point where Perkins was by perhaps the middle of the season for him to at least get more and more involved specifically on special teams.
The good news for Gallman is because his class had already finished up their work.
Compared to Perkins.
He did not have to go back to Clemson as Perkins did to UCLA. And all we heard when Paul Perkins got here is that, oh, he's missed so much. He's so far behind. He's really going to have to catch up. We're going to try to do what we can. And then even when the season started, we kept hearing how, oh, he's still behind. He's still behind. He's still got to catch up. He lost all that time. You don't get that back, okay? He had to get through that whole rookie season to become even close to being on the same plane as the other guys in the running back's room. Gallman does not have that disadvantage to work against.
No, I think that's an excellent point because we tend to forget Perkins. You're right, had to go back. And I even bring up Adrian Robinson when he had to wait to graduate from Cincinnati, if you remember, was another one who had to join the team late. And that's not easy. It's not easy when you have to play catch up.
That is true.
That's another player. It's not as if the Giants are purposely going after guys because of the class schedule. No. In an ideal world, they wish that they were here. But
it is what it is.
But it's very challenging. You can't just overlook if you miss some of the OTA period, minicamp, because you have to finish. And that's an NFL rule that you have to go back
Correct.
And finish. That's not a Giants rule. That's an NFL rule. So they're just following procedure. It's not easy to make all of that up within
and
the rookie year.
I think I speak universally for all the players that I've talked to, certainly in recent years, if not in the olden days, where they will tell you the toughest year of transition is from college to the pros. It's not if you have a new head coach. That can be difficult sometimes. It can be tough when you have a new coordinator sometimes. It can even be a little difficult if you have a new position coach. But it's that transition from the college game to the pro game that really turns the light bulb on, and it's like, whoa, it's bright in here. It's a big deal.
I want to get to one question on Twitter before we wrap up. John at JMF8013, I hear there's a tight race for the second safety spot between Andrew Adams and Darian Thompson. Who do you guys think will start?
Well, once again, I think it's a competitive situation. Adams proved last year that even as an undrafted rookie free agent, he was an NFL-caliber player. Heck, he started for most of the season on a team that won 11 games and went to the playoffs.
It's not bad.
So I think, you know, he proved that even if somebody out there feels he was the weak link, he couldn't have been that weak because he got the job done for the most part. Darian Thompson, they're going to bring him along slowly on purpose because they think he's got a terrific future ahead of him. And if that means at the initial outset of camp, or even at the outset of the preseason, or maybe even week one of the regular season, if that means that Adams starts, again, I think that's a scenario where the young guy will eventually, and that is Thompson, take that job. Maybe it's not week one. Maybe it's week three. I don't know. But I guarantee you at some point this season, Darian Thompson is probably going to start. And if not, I would not be at all surprised if Spags finds a way to get him on the field in a sub-package to where they go back to that three safety look that Perry Fuel had used some years ago, because Darian Thompson's ball hawking skills, his ability to turn over an offense, is too important to sit on the bench.
Yeah, that's why he set a Mountain West Conference career record in terms of the interceptions that he had. I mean, I'm confident to say that I think Darian Thompson will be the starter day one, barring health, of course. And Dave Merritt, the safeties coach, indicated that right now it's safe to say Thompson's the front runner, but Adams shouldn't be counted out because of what he accomplished last season.
No doubt.
But I think that if Thompson's fully healthy, that they will return to having him and Collins be the two safeties. But Adams is still extremely valuable. That's something that can't be overlooked. No matter who starts,
no question,
the other guy is going to have a tremendous amount of value on this year's team. You never can predict injuries. And as Paul just mentioned, if they do decide to go to three safeties, that safety is still going to be very much in the mix, even if they're not a starter.
I think it's similar to the Tomlinson situation, that if Thompson or Tomlinson are not starting week one, they probably will shortly thereafter,
to make some indentations as they get better acclimated to the playbook and more comfortable within the scheme. All right, well, that's going to wrap up today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Rest of the week, which we're going till Thursday because there will be no program on Fridays for the next few weeks as a result of the summer schedule here at the Giants facility. But we'll continue to preview the upcoming opponents for the Giants and continue to take your phone calls as well. We appreciate all the tweets, all the phone calls for today's program. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest news. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.